This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here today with Dan Kahn, Executive Director of the Cloud Native Computing Foundation.
Yeah, hi Ian. Thanks so much for having me. The Cloud Native Computing Foundation is an open source software foundation. Our job is to help support a set of software projects that a number of companies are using to deploy the really next generation of software infrastructure around the world. I run that organization and also put on events like KubeCon, Cloud Native Con here.
It's been an amazing year for you, hasn't it? Last year you were 68 members. This year you're announcing 216.
Exactly. And a year ago, we had our event in Berlin, which was sold out with 1,500 attendees, and it was really a great time. And here in Copenhagen, we have 4,300. So it's really an amazing milestone to just see the level of growth and engagement in our industry.
What's bringing both vendors and attendees to the events?
By far the best part of these events are just the people that are here, and I get the complaint a lot of, oh, there's too many tracks, I don't know which one to see. We actually post all the talks afterwards on YouTube, and so you absolutely can and should go there and find out more about it. But what really brings people here is the chance to talk in the hallway afterwards with the presenters and each other and hear about their experiences. We also have 97 sponsors here today, which we're just thrilled with, it across the entire public cloud and enterprise software company, and then all sorts of interesting add-ons and other areas. It really is just the best place to learn more about Kubernetes and Prometheus and all of our other technologies and how people are using them in the real world.
If we go back to when you founded, the members were all big players in the tech market. They all had a very specific reason for getting here. If I look at some of these newer members, we've got people like Twilio, Sonatype, Spotify. Not the sort of people that we would naturally, in some cases, associate with a foundation.
Part of our goal is to try and do some cross-pollination. And so the Kubernetes originally was started by Google, and we had IBM and Huawei and others at the beginning. But we've now gotten essentially every big public cloud, Amazon, Microsoft, Oracle, Alibaba, others, all of the enterprise software vendors. You also really need to mention the startups. So we have dozens of innovative startups that are exploring all the different areas of this. And then the end users. And so as this product crosses the chasm this year and becomes more popular, we're just thrilled to have, you mentioned streaming music companies, but also folks like New York Times or Reddit, Wikipedia on the publishing, and then all kinds of finance companies like Bloomberg, Goldman Sachs, Capital One. So it's really a neat opportunity as these different folks work together and also argue and debate what should come next and what features should come in and which should stay outside. But that's really the whole point of events like this.
One of the challenges that people are facing in the cloud, and they've had it with virtual machines prior to the cloud coming along, they have it now when they look at containers, is stability. They're never going to be in one cloud for the whole of the life of that application. One of the focuses that you've taken as an organization is the ability to move from place to place to place. Yet when we look at the number of distributions, that's exploded in the last year. How do you prevent drift, where people work with a distribution, but then find they can't actually move from one cloud platform to another cloud platform?
That's really been a core part of our mission and focus, particularly for the last year, what we think of as cloud portability. And so the idea is that containerization is a pretty well understood, well adopted set of technologies of how to design your app that is containerized, that all dependencies are built into it. And then we've created a certified Kubernetes program that we launched just last September and have had a really extraordinary level of adoption, where essentially every company in the industry, the major public clouds, the enterprise software vendors, all sorts of startups, have signed up to this. There's some subtleties to the program that very much designed to make this a workable but portable, meaningful standard. And so, for example, companies certify by running the test suite on their implementation and showing that they're supporting all of the APIs. But we don't have a third-party lab that you go to and need this independent verification. Instead, any customer can come along and run that same test suite again and say, oh, you say that this API is available, but it's not. And then there's a whole process that if necessary, they could complain to their vendor or escalate that to us and we could engage with them. The goal is that the certified Kubernetes brand actually means something and really does act for the industry on ensuring portability.
That's been the downfall of many a certification program in the past, even where they've used a third party to do the certification. The reality is there's always been grey areas, there's always been differences between vendors, and particularly when we talk about portability, there's always been the temptation by vendors to add a little bit in to try and keep people with them. How much policing are you having to do?
We very much encourage our vendors to add a little bit in. And so one of the concepts is that Kubernetes includes a set of several hundred APIs. And what certified Kubernetes means is that you support all of those in a compliant way. But if you then want to package that up with other pieces of software and say, hey, for any company implementing this, we think this is the best monitoring stack and tracing. And obviously, we hope that a lot of those vendors would be choosing different technologies and projects from CNCF, but they're welcome to combine any of them together and say, here's the recommended stack from that vendor, from that distribution. The aspiration then is that any end user can say, hey, I was happy with this, but now I want to switch over and try this alternative. And because the base level of Kubernetes is going to be compatible between them, they're going to find it relatively easy to move their workloads.
How carefully are you finding end user companies taking advantage? Because the issue of drift comes very much into play here. We saw it with Unix, we saw it with PIC. We start out with something where we have a core set of things that everybody's going to work with. People add little bits on top because they want to give more value back to the customer. But the customer ends up using those and becoming dependent upon those. Then when they come to portability, portability goes away. They don't only have to recompile as we had on Unix, but they suddenly find, as we did with PIC, that a bunch of the APIs and things they built on no longer exist. Is there a move to make it easy for customers to actually see what they've written to in terms of core and what they've taken advantage of, so when they come to a portability project, they can just run something over the top and say, this moves or this needs work?
You should ask me again in a year when we're going to be in Barcelona in May and see whether we've actually lived up to our promise or not. But my belief is that today, people absolutely have that cloud portability, and they genuinely are moving between public clouds. And then the other area that we think is incredibly promising is what we call hybrid cloud, so that ability to run some workloads on their own bare metal on Kubernetes, and then some in the public cloud, and even that ability to burst up. That base concept of, hey, I have a container, and I've written some YAML on how it should be deployed, of what the requirements of it are, absolutely works reliably between all of it. What I think the public cloud vendors would say is, well, yes, we offer value-added services of this database or this logging mechanism or other sorts of things, and we certainly hope that customers will fall in love with those and think that they're so great that they couldn't change. To date, I haven't really seen that happening. I think that all of the major public cloud vendors, for example, offer extremely high-quality Postgres implementations of a cloud-hosted database, so using one of them doesn't stop you from moving to another one.
That cloud bursting is also an interesting subject, because if we look at how we've tried to cloud burst in the past for people who've had virtual machines, they've had a very heavyweight object, they've not had the bandwidth, they've struggled with it. And for a lot of people, it's kind of put them off this idea of moving between on-premise into the cloud and back again. Of course, when we talk containers, we're talking about small amounts of code. We can move it almost as fast as we can move a bunch of email. Is that message finally getting across to people? Are they seeing that this really is a cloudburst portable mechanism where you can put it where you want it, where you can best use it? Or is there still work to be done in convincing them that we've actually crossed that hurdle?
I think bluntly that there is still work to be done. My impression is that really only the biggest companies today are heavily investing in hybrid cloud, and that that's not just a trivial thing where you just download it and run it and it just works perfectly out of the box. What I'm seeing much more is a number of companies using bare metal, so running Kubernetes on bare metal on their own implementation, and then they have the ability to burst up internally as different applications, different parts of their application have different demand. And then tons of uses in the public cloud where they absolutely are able to spin up and spin down different machines based on that vertical auto-scaling. For example, GitHub is a member of our end user community, and they have a large bare metal deployment. They're investing now to be able to burst up to the public cloud for some workloads, but I'd still say that's still somewhat new work. And in Kubernetes, there's a whole movement around federation of how you combine different clusters together, but it's still some of the earliest or least mature areas of Kubernetes today.
One of the concerns I hear a lot from system admins is security. They worry that they've written this piece of code, they've put it in a container, but that code's quite sensitive. If they have to burst or they have to move it elsewhere, they're worried how can they be sure that it will remain secure in the container. You brought on a couple of security projects last year. Where are we going with being able to actually say to people categorically, here's a wrapper around a container, and this container is completely isolated, we can guarantee the security?
In general, people miss how essential containers are to modern security. Actually, what my keynote is about is using continuous integration, continuous delivery, and how it's necessary to continually update your software in order to ensure that you're able to make use of all the library updates, all the security updates that are coming out. And then the great value of containerization is that each of those containers are immutable. They never change after you create them. You can record them and ensure that they're moving around correctly. We do have a couple new projects that you mentioned that are all quite promising. Now, these are sandbox-level projects, meaning that they're not quite as mature as our incubating projects or Kubernetes, which has graduated. Specifically, a pair called Spiffy and Spire are a way of learning what's in a container, securing it, allowing it to securely identify itself to other workloads and other containers. Spiffy is the specification for it, and Spire is an implementation. And then there's another one called OPA, Open Policy Agent, which is a relatively generic language for specifying policy of what different containers, different workloads are allowed to do. Those are definitely worth looking at. Some projects that came in last year that are also quite worth investigation are called the Update Framework, or TUF, and this is a way of distributing software to have confidence along the way that you're getting exactly what you expect to. And then a specific implementation of it called Notary that most people are familiar with because it's built into Docker Hub. But the idea is that Notary is a standalone project, and so if you are distributing software to your customers, to your partners, something that you should definitely be investigating. And those are incubating projects, so more mature.
TUF is interesting from multiple standpoints. First of all, from a marketplace perspective, the ability for somebody to write a microservice, sell a microservice on. But also in a supply chain environment where a large vendor who's trying to do much more digital integration with their customers might want to be distributing pieces of code to them to be able to not just put it into a container but actually have it signed, sealed, know where it's gone and everybody be able to trust it. That helps them in what they're pushing around. How much uptake have you seen in the marketplace with people actually using TUF to secure containers? And are you starting to hear from organizations that they see this as a way to distribute code to partners and suppliers?
That would be a relatively new use case for TUF and Notary. People are using it today for Docker Hub, and you do have that environment where you can download a container and have the confidence that it was created by the company that you expected it to. There's some market for that today, but what I'm seeing more of is that many of the workloads in Kubernetes are ones that you compile yourself, build your own containers for, and then many more of the value-added services provided by third parties tend to be provided by services that you get access to on your cluster. And there's a particular technology that is gaining traction in our community called the Open Service Broker API. This is a way for services to identify themselves and then for a cluster to be able to see what they have access to and to be able to connect to new services. It actually comes out of the Cloud Foundry Foundation, which is a sister organization to ours.
If we look at education, then part of the challenge here is making sure we have enough training centers on board, we have the right training for people. Historically, a lot of training has been about self-teach, books, go learn it yourself. You've made some significant announcements this week. You've got 41 training partners in one program. You've also announced a second program that's a much higher level of training, moving towards more certification. How actively are companies and individuals asking for certification? And how much are you involved in writing, controlling, and curating that training content?
We've really been thrilled with the level of interest and uptake in this area. Back in September, we launched the Certified Kubernetes Administrator Exam, And as you mentioned, we've now had 41 companies become what we call a Kubernetes certified service providers, which is that they have multiple engineers internally who've passed that exam. They have that expertise to work with companies. That's a really in-depth level of training and expertise around how to administer a cluster. But there's a natural follow-on, which is just for a regular application developer who wants to have their software running on a cluster, but doesn't necessarily need to operate it themselves. And so that's the reason today we're launching the beta version of the Certified Kubernetes Application Developer, or CKAD. This is the natural complement to our previous program. And so there's really been a huge level of uptake and interest in both of them. We've had over 1,200 people sign up for the CKA exam, and we're now thrilled to have over 600 that have already signed up for our CKAD. All these functions we see as really ecosystem development and enablement as a core function of why CNCF is here. We also offer online video training through the Linux Foundation that are both two different courses that are set to allow you to then pass those exams. We also have a number of training partners. In fact, we have a new program called Kubernetes Training Partners who can do in-person trainings with you to get you ready to pass those exams. I will just mention one neat thing about the exams are that they're not multiple choice. So they're online proctored exams where there's someone watching you via webcam, but you're given actual software and clusters that you need to go configure or debug or get set. So it's a much more realistic, practical test of your knowledge.
As someone who's been a trainer for many people's programs over the years, I'm really glad to hear that. There's nothing worse than students just wanting to be taught which boxes they should be picking up in a multiple choice exam. We are just at the keynote. This is the start of another year. What should people be looking for and looking to hold you to account for over the next 12 months before we meet again in Barcelona?
Definitely one of our big focuses this year is China. We're very excited that we'll be throwing our first ever KubeCon Cloud Native Con in Shanghai in November, where there's just been a massive level of interest and adoption there. That's a natural area. Another area for expansion is networking, where Kubernetes is wildly popular and successful in the enterprise with startups and big companies. But we think that carrier networking is a natural expansion area where you're going to see a lot more interest over time. And then I'd say a third is serverless. And so we're quite excited to see serverless as a facet of cloud native computing to be able to take advantage of a lot of things that people love about running on platforms like AWS Lambda, but to try and decompose them, things like the application development, the infinite scalability, the per second or per microsecond billing, and making those more widely available across a lot of different kinds of workloads. So hopefully you'll see us making progress on all of those. Another example of the engagement in China that is we're thrilled to announce today, the JD.com just joined as our first end user platinum member. They're our third platinum member from China, but they're really an amazing company, the largest retailer in China. They've been using Kubernetes in production since late 2015. They have over 20,000 servers in production, and their largest cluster is over 5,000 servers. So we're really thrilled to work with them and get their inputs on our projects going forward.
Dan, sounds like a busy year. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.